what I want to start out and ask you, have you ever had this moment, a moment in your life when you feel like you cannot take one more thing? You kind of reach that limit, reach that edge where it's like, okay, this bad thing has happened. Well, and now this bad thing has happened. Well, now you heard that this bad thing has happened to this person you love, and now they're coming to you needing help, and you're like, you actually said, if one more thing happens, I'm going to just flat out lose it. So maybe you've been there, or maybe you've been in the place where that one extra thing actually then did happen right after that, and you lost it. I think this comes to mind because a couple years ago when we were moving our stuff that we have now finally reacquired and put into the basement of our home that we just purchased, the closing is done, no more waiting, no more weirdness, no more shenanigans, it's all done. When I was originally moving that from our home in Rochester Hills, which we sold so that we could move to the city of Detroit, right in the center of the city, I had a lot of, it was kind of one of those things where we moved most of our stuff to the city and we left our house staged so that when they showed it, we were not only not there, but it looked like inviting. So our home, because we were gone and we took off any limitations for realtors to show it, we said, show it as often as you can. In 30 days, it showed over 100 times. It was crazy. As far as I know, when they checked there, that realty office, that was the record. It literally doesn't mean anything. It's not a record you want. You want to have the fewest showings and just sell it, you know, not sit on it. But anyway, so when we came, when we actually sold the house and went to go get the staging stuff, which was a few random couches and some stuff, it was one of those things where I rented a truck. I'm like, oh, there's not that much stuff left. I'll get a few guys to come help me grab it and we'll move it out. And waited till the day of the closing to go do this. So I had some friends meet me there at like, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning, had some donuts. True to form, I hadn't really packed anything. I sort of arrived on the scene as my friends did with this big truck. And I'm like, all right, let's just grab our stuff and go. And as we walked around the house, we realized that there was a lot more stuff there than we realized. Like a lot more stuff. Like it filled up a 24-foot truck to the brim. And all of the cars of the guys who were helping me move. And it took several hours, and my brother-in-law, Tim, who was there, he had graciously offered us a portion of his basement to store it in. And a few minutes into it is when Tim was like, just so you know, there's no way in the universe that this amount of stuff is going to fit in my basement. And so I'm like, oh, that's okay. I can handle this. It's not a big deal. No problem. This was May of 2012. Angela was in New York with her family on sort of a vacation from these sort of details. No, I told her to stay. I'm like, it's fine. I got it. There's not that much stuff left. I just got power of attorney, and we handled it as far as the closing went. As I look back, it would have been great to have a little extra help from her, but you know what? That was fine, and that was my bad, as they say. That was my fault. So we're packing all this stuff up. Tim's like, Cliff, it's not going to fit. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to call these storage companies because they advertise these great rates. So I went out, I typed in Google really fast, standing in my walk-in closet so no one would see me. And I'm like, oh, okay, $85 a month. That should be about right. I call them up. Hey, I want to get that $85 a month storage thing. They're like, oh, sorry about that. Yeah, that's not right. Like, we don't offer that price. I'm like, well, that was on your website. Well, I know, but it's just wrong. We keep meaning to take it down, but we just haven't. The real price is $273 for that. I was like, that's kind of illegal, I think. That's like, come get a car for $10. Oh, can I get that $10 car? Oh, it's actually $38,000. We just haven't taken it down yet. I'm pretty sure that's the old bait and switch to the extreme. So like, well, I don't know what to tell you. I just work here part-time, you know, so poor lady, it wasn't her fault. So now I'm starting to kind of freak out. Now I'm hearing $200, $275, and I'm like, I'm starting to feel beads of sweat come down. And my buddy's like, hey, buddy, where do you want to put this? I'm like, I don't know, anywhere. Just throw it in the woods. Let's just. And I'm starting to just feel like the walls in this. And it was a big walk-in closet, but it started to feel really small. And I got Angie on the phone. I'm like, sweetie, I think I'm losing it. I think I might. If this is what losing it feels like, I think I'm on that train heading for Lostville or something. I don't know, because I am like. I started to get really, like, I couldn't really breathe very well. Like, even thinking about it, I'm starting to get a little bit nervous, you know. And I don't know if that was anxiety or everything in between, but I was like, man, I've got to figure something out. So I make other calls. I'm like, hey, you own a warehouse in Detroit, buddy. Can I bring some stuff? He's like, yeah, but, you know, stuff gets stolen out of there like every week, so just don't bring anything valuable. I'm like, oh, well, there's a lot of CD jewel cases that I don't want to have stolen. I didn't know what our stuff was. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I don't want our stuff to be stolen. Otherwise, I would just like sort of put it on the street or something. Or so I'm like, well, that's not going to work. I'm calling Jerry Hines. I'm like, buddy, do you have any room in your attic? He's like, maybe a few feet. I'm like, okay, well, maybe we can like go to Tim's and pack some there and then drive to Detroit and just roll the dice and pray and put that there and then go up to Jerry's and throw the rest in his attic. And so I am literally just sweating and stressing out. Thankfully, we got to the Tim's basement, and one of my buddies had brought his whole construction crew to help us unload, and they just somehow miraculously fit all of my stuff in every nook and cranny of his basement so that he could still have functional use of it, yet we could still store all of our stuff. But I'm telling you, for me, when I think of this, that was where I was. I was in the closet, sweating, freaking out. The walls were coming in. I literally at one point just sat down on the ground and was like, what if I had this thought, what if I just took a nap? I really just want to sleep right now. I haven't slept in a long time very well. And I'm like, what if I just curled up in a ball, found a blanket somewhere, you know, and our stuff. We've got a lot of blankets and a lot of beds that we never use and the other stuff that we're dragging from house to house. So let me just grab my blanket and just roll up in a ball and just take a nap and just maybe it'll all go away. That was a conscious thought that I had just 2 years ago. So I can't even say that this was like, I've come so far since then. I was like, I would just like, and honestly, in that moment, it made me miss my mom. And I'm being totally honest. Because, you know, my mom died a few years before that, so she wasn't going to swoop in. Plus, they lived really far away anyway, but just to hear her voice be like, it's going to be okay, sweetie. You're going to figure out a way to do it. I just needed that sound, and I wasn't hearing that sound. I just wanted to, honestly, I thought about sneaking out the back door, getting in a car, and just driving to New York to see Ange and be like, I don't know where our stuff is. I don't know what happened at the closing. I just needed to leave. Have you ever been in a moment, maybe not quite that weird, but a moment where you're like, if one more thing happens, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose my mind. I can't handle anymore. We're talking about discipleship this morning, and if you want to turn your Bibles with me to Matthew chapter 11, I want to look at a passage of scripture that you've heard many times. And for those of you who haven't heard it before, I pray that this falls fresh on your ears this morning. But Matthew chapter 11, Jesus says this to those who are listening to him. In Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28, he says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Come to me, all who labor and, another translation says, and are weary, and I will give you rest. Come to me. It's an invitation. Jesus starts out this passage on discipleship as an invitation to come to him. But what I love about it, it's an invitation that requires us to do something. It requires us to move towards him. It says, hey, come here. You come to me. I'm not coming to you. You come to me. You take some steps forward. And if you take some steps forward, what will happen? All who labor and are heavy laden or weary, come to me, all who labor and are weary, and I will give you rest. I love that word for labor or weary. It's this idea of being just spent, exhausted, just wiped out, reaching the end of your rope. I cannot do one more thing. I'm just weary. And are heavy laden or burdened. It's interesting when you think of the crowd that he was talking to here. He's talking to Jewish people. There's a picture here that's presented about, in fact, in Matthew chapter 23, he's talking to the Pharisees. And he describes this picture of being heavy laden and laying burdens on people's backs. Listen to what he says in Matthew 23 in verse 1. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, the scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. And that's, just so you understand that, that's the spot where you would sit in the synagogue. You would sit in Moses' seat, and that was where you would read the text. That's where you would sort of do your teaching. So you'd sit in Moses' seat. The scribes and Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. So practice, this is amazing. So practice and observe whatever they tell you. He's saying, hey, when they sit down and they teach, practice and observe whatever they tell you. But then Jesus says, but not what they do. Isn't that amazing? He says, they sit on Moses' seat, so practice and observe what they tell you, but not what they do. For they preach, but do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with their finger. So later on, he calls out exactly what he's describing. He's saying, boy, these guys will get up, and you know what? They're saying some good things. You know, they're teaching out of the Hebrew Bible. So listen to them and observe. You know, when God's word is being read, it never returns void. So listen to them, but don't do what they do. Can you imagine being a scribe or a Pharisee and hearing this? He says, well, they don't practice what they preach. In fact, they lay heavy burdens on you. They find new ways to make it more difficult to follow God, but they are not willing to move or even lift a finger to help you do it. It's a powerful picture. For they preach but do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move or lift a finger. So when he talks about, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, he's referring not only to that moment where we feel pressured, where we feel overwhelmed, where the cares of our lives are just weighing upon our backs in such a way that we don't feel like we can even move. He's saying also to those who have been heavy laden by trying to follow and live like the Pharisees and the scribes. In this picture here, he's saying, boy, you're figuring out new ways, new things to add to the Bible, new things to add to the law. We've talked about this before, but one of the best examples was, you know, they're trying to observe the Sabbath. And so the scribes and Pharisees were like, well, we don't want our people to violate the Sabbath. And the word was to not work on the Sabbath. And so they're thinking, well, what can we do to protect our people from not working? One of the things they decided to forbid was taking a bath on the Sabbath. Now, I don't know about you, but taking a bath has never really felt like work to me. I mean, just the concept of a bath, you're just putting the water in, it's nice and warm, and you're shower, that's like the functional, get the job done and get on your way. But the bath is like sort of set up to be something where you know, for some of you, you'd say, that's my evening routine. I slip into the bath, the kids are down, everything's finished, and I'm like, book, TV, just nothingness, music, whatever. That is not work to you. But what they said was, when you take a bath, you might spill water on the floor and then have to clean it up with a towel, which would now be work and put you in violation of the Sabbath, so please don't bathe. That's the perfect picture of putting something that's nowhere found in the Bible on top of the backs and a heavy burden to bear. So they're like, man, so to follow this way, I know I'm not supposed to do this, I'm not supposed to work on the Sabbath, but I hear something about I can't even take a bath? Like, that's something I kind of enjoy. Is that? No, I'm sorry. If you bathe on the Sabbath, you're not doing enough. Just loading this stuff on their backs. Heavy laden. It's the picture of legalism, is putting more rules upon it because we don't trust the people to actually walk with God and follow what he says. So we want to craft another road. Want to add a little bit to it. Some of you and some of the people in this original audience, heavy laden also refers to carrying other people's burdens. Have you ever found yourself weary because you're carrying someone else's burdens? Their problems become your problems. You have a personality where it's like you find out someone's struggling and you enter that moment and take that on as if it's your own. And if you do that enough, you start to feel weary and you start to feel heavy laden. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you more to do. No, that's not what he says. And I will give you rest. I will give you rest. You think about, well, what does that rest look like in him? You think about, what does the rest of Jesus look like? You know, I don't know how well you are able to sleep when you feel this way, because sometimes, isn't it the worst? You're weary, you're exhausted, but you can't sleep because your mind won't stop running. Have you ever been in that place? Where it's like, you're like, physically, I feel like I can just faint, but I lay in bed and all I think about is all the stuff that's pressing down on me. True rest, when we are at peace, is when we rest the best. Didn't really mean for that to rhyme, but it happened. When we are able to find peace in our lives, that's when we're able to now rest. When you put your head down at night, you're like, ah, it's a job well done. It was a great day. I'm going to sleep. You sleep good at night when your affairs are in order and when you've given things back to God and you are not worrying about them. But worry and anxiety and those concerns and those burdens keep us up at night. Even when we are so tired, we desperately need to sleep. But this rest he's talking about is a deeper level of rest. It is that soul rest. It is that rest that just refreshes us and revitalizes us, sort of what vacation is meant to do for some people. You want it to be revitalizing and refreshing. And what's beautiful is when you trust him, when you give those burdens over to him, then you are able to truly rest because you're not hanging on to them anymore. You're trusting that Jesus is in control and he's going to help and he's going to take care of it. So you hand it over. There's no fear. There's peace. And there's confidence that it's settled. I love this. He's giving them a picture of the true rest that these people in the audience and that we can have in Jesus, where when we put our trust and our hope and our faith in him for eternal life and his death, burial, and resurrection, we can have true rest because it is finished. It has been paid. It is done. The greatest struggle of our lives, the greatest question of our lives, our biggest purpose, our quest for that has been settled in Jesus. So no matter what the outer circumstances look like, at the end of the day, we can truly rest in the identity that Jesus Christ has given us and that he has paid it. It's done. It's settled. He's in control. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Just for one moment, just think of that term, I will give you rest. Have you ever had a moment in your life where someone has done that for you? A few years ago, when I was on staff at our church in Michigan, we were going through an incredibly difficult season. Just had a lot on my mind, a lot on my plate. Was not sharing with everyone what was going on because I didn't know where to start. And so I just quietly carried it. I quietly was trying to be the rock for everyone. And you can't hide that very long. Have you noticed that? When you just carry it and carry it and carry it and carry it, at some point it comes out of you, especially when you're tired and overtired because you're not resting at all. And so in one particular staff meeting, I was, I guess, a little bit snippy, we'll say. A little snippy. Didn't like all the ideas that were going on and just felt free to vent and share my opinion. And our senior pastor caught it. And he found me in the hallway and he was like, are you okay? Which was encouraging because that meant that I'm not always like that. That was good to know. It's like, well, you were snippy and that's not normally you. I'm like, okay, good. And I'm like, you know what? To be honest with you, there's just a lot going on right now. Like, I just feel like I'm being crushed. And he said, well, what can I take off your plate to help? And I said, well, it's amazing that you would ask, because that was the day, the next day sermon notes were due. I was writing the sermon notes for all of our campuses, and it had to be this certain format and about 5 or 6 pages long, and I was just going to pull an all-nighter because I had like 5 other things to do that day. I'd already told Angela, I'm just going to be at church until like 7 in the morning. This was the day before, at like 8 in the morning. And he said, is there anything I take off your plate? I said, you know, I hate to do this, but man, if I could somehow have, if you could find someone else to take that from me, that would be huge. And at that exact moment, one of my buddies was walking out of his office. Poor guy. I just said it. Doug's like, I'll find somebody. And then my buddy Steve just is like, hey, guys, what's going on? And Doug's like, hey, Steve, I know it's your birthday, but I'm going to give you an enormous assignment here to help Cliff out. Okay. And he did it. I remember what was powerful about that moment, though, is that sometimes people will offer that in exchange for telling them absolutely everything that you're struggling with in their life. Well, can I take something off your plate? What's wrong? Tell me everything. And you're just not ready to share. The stuff you're going through is so deep, it's so painful. You're just really struggling and you're really wrestling with it. That you're not really in a position. You just need someone who's like, well, how can I help you? It's almost like the toll, the fee for them to help you is just finding out all of the stuff that's going on and you may not be ready to share it. In that moment, I was so moved by his desire to help me without finding out all of the stuff that was going on. Because it showed he trusted me. If it was something too intense, I would tell him. I remember after that moment, walking into my office, shutting the door, locking it, closing the blinds, and falling on the floor and weeping. Because I tasted of rest. Someone had seen my pain and anguish and truly lightened my load. And I didn't even have to ask. I prayed. I was like, God, I don't know how to help. I don't know how you can help me in this, but something today needs to happen. Something needs to give. And this happened. Have you ever had that moment where that deep rest is offered to you? Jesus is saying, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest, true rest, soul rest, peace in the midst of your circumstances. And then we continue. Sometimes people love to just read verse 28 and not read 29 and 30 because they feel like it's a contradiction, but it's not. Verse 29, he says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now we hear yoke today. Some people who love eggs, like my father-in-law, he loves eggs. In fact, when we were in Detroit, I took him to Sapino's, my favorite pizzeria in the world, and they actually have a pizza there where they crack eggs on top of the pizza and cook it right in. It sounds weird, but it's glorious. It's called the Bismarck, and this guy was just pounding it, which was amazing. And then he proceeded to get into the car as we're ready to leave, and he went to take a sip of his water bottle and realized he was still holding the cup from the restaurant in his hand. So a little kleptomania over here. So thankfully they didn't stop him at the border. I guess the blue plastic cup, they just allowed that to happen. But it was so priceless. He's like, oh no, I stole. We outran the police and we were able to get back. But it was glorious. He loves it. When he's around eggs, he just loses any sense around him of what's going on. So be careful with purses and phones. If you serve eggs, you're just going to get cleaned out. So yoke, but no, there's another picture of yoke outside of eggs, and the other picture of yoke was this idea of this farm equipment that they would put on the shoulders of farm animals, but then also into the world of slavery, unfortunately, they also used this for humans, and they would fit these yokes upon them. But there was also a third meaning of yoke. In the Jewish world, a rabbi with authority to teach, a rabbi who had what was called smiha. Don't even ask me to spell it. There's apostrophes involved, and there's a K in there, believe it or not. Smiha rabbis. They were actually authorized. These were guys like Gamaliel and Hillel and Shammai. These were guys who actually took students on. And they were given the authority to interpret scripture. And they actually taught in a certain vein of scripture. So a quick example would be Hillel. I believe that the order of the commandment should be love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. They'll have no other, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Then the second one for Hillel was love your neighbor as yourself. That was his yoke. He started there. Shammai, on the other hand, first commandment that he taught was also love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But his second command was thou shalt have no other gods before me. That was his yoke. And in the Jewish mind, you would always obey the greater commandment. And so how this played out was the followers of Shammai tended to be zealots because they didn't value neighbors as much as they valued ending idolatry. And so a follower of the Shammai's yoke would be more likely to be a zealot who would be willing to kill a tax collector or a soldier because in their mind that neighbor is not as valuable as the ending the idolatry. Whereas Hillel, in his world, they would be against that. They would say, no, we need to value, we need to love the Lord your God and our neighbors before we need to worry about ending idolatry. So those who would follow Hillel would have that sort of a teaching idea, and those who would follow Shammai would have that sort of a bent, and that was called their yoke, that interpretation that they would follow. Only rabbis that were famous and took on students and had this thing called smicha could actually teach in their own yoke, and then you would follow that. So when Jesus is saying this, he's saying a lot of different things, and if you want to know where Jesus addresses this, look at the Sermon on the Mount. Remember when he says, you've heard it said that you shall not commit adultery. But I say, if you have looked at a woman and lustfully in your heart, you've already committed adultery. That was a perfect picture of saying, here's what others are saying to you in their teaching, but I'm saying it goes deeper. It goes deeper than just not having an affair. It goes to the level of the heart. If you have lust in your heart, but you've never physically cheated on your wife, Jesus said the lust in your heart is the same in God's eyes. So that was his yoke. His yoke was taking those commandments that they knew and expanding upon them and presenting them in a new way. So when he says, take my yoke upon you, he was talking not only about his interpretation of the scriptures and his teachings, but also in the sense of the understanding of the farm equipment of the yoke and the slavery equipment of a yoke. What's amazing is if you look at Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, it says, Paul says, for freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. You catch that word again? For freedom, Christ has set us free, and stand firm, therefore, do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. Again means at some point there was a yoke of slavery upon all of us. So what this is saying here is that all men have a yoke on. All of us have some piece of equipment that is controlling us, that is leading us. Jesus says, take off that yoke of slavery, that yoke of oppression, that yoke that is being led by an evil taskmaster whose goal is to steal, kill, and destroy. Take off that yoke of slavery and take on my yoke. Take on my way of teaching, my way of living. Follow me and I will lead you. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Again, he talks about yoke, this idea of this piece of equipment that helps us for oxen, it helped them to plow, it kept them in a straight line, it enabled them to, you could carry things on it. On a human being, it was put on the shoulders to carry heavy loads. Have you ever had something where you were carrying so much, maybe you had a bar on your back, or you were just carrying stuff, or maybe both of your children jumped on your back at the same time, or something like that happened for you, and you just kind of like, there's so much weight on your back that you can't even lift your head up. You're just getting it one step at a time because there's so much weight on your back that you physically cannot lift up your eyes to see where you're going. This is what he's describing here. Those were weary and heavy laden, meaning that the yokes that were upon them were so weighted down that they could not even lift up their heads to see where they're going. They're just taking little steps to try to move forward, but they can't see anything in front of them. And he says to the scribes and Pharisees, you load them up like this, but you won't even lift a finger to help them. There's too much weight on his back. Will someone go help him? Take some of that off. For my
yoke is easy and my burden is light, he said. I'm gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your soul. So it's amazing here that Jesus calls himself gentle, isn't it? It's not really something that most men want to be known as. Have you met Cliff? He is so gentle. It just is kind of a weird thing to say. Like, what do you mean gentle? Like, his handshake is gentle? Like, what do you mean gentle? Gentle is not necessarily a term that guys want to have. I mean, we're out there killing each other on the field of battle. I come inside, they're like, hey, great summer, man. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. You're unbelievably gentle. When you tackled me, it was very gentle and caring. When you hit me with that paintball, there was some gentleness behind that ball that hit me. Very gentle, man. And you look at the life of Jesus and you say, yes, there were moments where he was incredibly gentle with children and with others. But then you look at moments in the temple when he's overturning the tables and he makes a whip out of cords. Do you think those guys that he was literally whipping in the back, oh, it hurt, but it was still sort of gentle. You know, I don't think they were thinking that. I think they were running for their lives because this guy was just driving them out. It said he had anger in his heart, righteous anger. So gentle, what does that mean that he's gentle? It's a picture of meekness. Gentle, if you define it through the word that's used here, it talks about patiently enduring. In other words, picture the fierce warrior, the Navy SEAL, the Army Ranger, the MMA fighter, the boxer, and his children are jumping on him, yanking on his ears, kicking him in the sides, and he's just laughing and smiling and playing with them. Or the giant Rottweiler that's really good with little kids. And they're like, oh, it's amazing. His name is Killer, but he's really gentle with kids until he bites the first one. That's what I always love. Like, well, he's gentle until he has opportunity, you know, or my kid comes in looking like a T-bone steak and then it's over. But it's that picture of strength under control. It's that power that's being held back. It's and even when you think of suffering and the suffering that Jesus went to, patiently enduring the suffering. How he could have struck back at those men that were beating him. How he could have just leveled everyone around him, mocking him. And yet in meekness and gentleness, he patiently endured. I love it too. It also means to be free from pretension. To not be pretentious. Now some are like, well, I've been called pretentious my whole life and I always thought that was a compliment. It is not a compliment at all. Pretentious is like just thinking higher of yourself than you ought to. Your stories are always bigger and more grandiose and we all hear them and we're like, that didn't really go anywhere. But that was like a 30-minute explanation of how awesome this was. You know, you spend time with people that are pretentious and you walk away and you're like, man, they really think they're pretty amazing. Free from pretension is that picture of just a reality, knowing who you are. It's a humility. It's a lowliness. And he even goes on to say, I'm gentle and I'm lowly in heart. I'm lowly in heart. That's a picture of his humility. In fact, in the Greek world, humility was the lowest on the list of virtues to try to attain. Isn't that amazing? You know, they had all these other virtues, you know, ambition and courage and all this other stuff that they were going after. The very last one at the bottom was, humility, I guess, should be on the list. We shouldn't leave it out, but put it at the bottom. So in a culture, in a world, this worldview was in Jesus' day, humility was the lowest thing that people were taught to go after. Humility. And then he goes on to say, for I am gentle, lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. You will find rest for your souls. So he's offering them this journey. He's offering them this pathway, this picture of a new yoke, of something that's on their shoulders and saying, walk with me in this path. But he says, in this, you will find rest for your souls. Again, how is this restful? Especially when you look at Jesus' teachings. Especially when you look at the Sermon on the Mount where he says, well, you've heard it said, just don't have an affair. I say, not only don't have an affair, but don't harbor lust in your heart. If you ask me, that's harder to do. That's harder to do. He's getting to the heart of it. He's saying, listen, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's good to not have affairs, but he's saying the deeper issue is that you, if you are harboring lust in your heart, you've got this yoke of slavery. You're being controlled. You're being enslaved by the lust that's in your heart that no one even knows about. So I love that picture. He's saying here, you know, you will find rest for your souls because of this yoke that I'm offering you. So it seems like a harder way. It seems more intense, but he's saying in this way, he later describes it as the narrow road. Yes, it may be more treacherous at times. Yes, it may be more difficult to make that kind of a decision. When you're faced with a big decision, you're like, well, the easy way to go would be this, but I know in my heart that's not really the right way, even though it's probably the path of least resistance. But I know God's calling us to say no to that and say yes to this. Isn't it amazing when you make those sort of decisions, how much peace you find even in the midst of all the storms that that decision has caused you? You know deep down inside that was the right thing to do. Therefore, God gives you peace in it. Instead of staying on the wide road and the path of least resistance, you think, which actually enslaves you in a different way. I'm gentle and lowly in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. There's a verse in Jeremiah 6, verse 16, where it says, I stand at the crossroads and look. You stand at the crossroads and look. In that moment in your life where there's two ways to go. And it says, ask for the ancient paths and walk in them, and there you will find rest for your souls. He's drawing on this picture saying, the ancient path was the way that those before us have gone. In Israel, they mark the ancient path on Mount Carmel with these little circles and these little painted signs to show you, this is how Elijah got up and down the mountain thousands of years ago. Oh, there's this other way on the backside of the mountain that's all paved and really nice. But if you want to take the ancient path where you're yanking yourself up by saplings and scraping yourself and falling and just about losing your life several times, but that's what Elijah did. So there's that part of it that says, well, I want to take the ancient path. I want to walk the steps that those before me have gone. And Jesus says, the ancient path may be more difficult, but in it you will find rest for your souls. You will find peace, a deep and lasting peace. And he finishes by saying, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. This right here trips people up. When they say, well, this doesn't feel easy to me. Cancer is not easy. Needing a new organ is not light. Losing my job is not easy. Losing a spouse is not light. The beautiful thing about this is he's talking about, for my yoke is easy. This is a word picture about the actual yoke. It's describing a master who loves the servant who's wearing it or the animal that's wearing it so much that it's made with care. There's padding on it for the shoulders. If it's too tight, that's fixed. If there's too much weight, we're going to lessen it for you. It's not saying that there's no weight at all, but it's saying there's just enough on there that you can handle because Jesus' yoke is easy. It's going to fit you well. He's going to fit it to you because his heart for you is good. As opposed to the master who wants the yoke to be uncomfortable. And if you start to complain about it, you just get whipped harder. They want their slaves to suffer because they want that pain involved because it reminds them of who they are. They're nothing. And Jesus says, no, I don't want you to suffer like that. I want you to have my yoke upon you, which I have fitted for you. And I'm not going to give you more than you can handle. But you're still going to carry weight. There are still things he's going to hang on that yoke that you're going to need to walk. But what I love is that Jesus puts weight on it just enough so that when you're walking, you're not walking like this, so loaded down that you can't look up. But he puts weight on it, fits it to your shoulders, breaks the yoke of slavery, gives you a new yoke. And then he says, as you walk, fix your eyes on me. So as you're walking through these seasons with weight, you know where you're going. You know who's in control. You know who you can trust. You know he won't give you more than you can handle. And that's a whole different experience when you're walking through those kinds of seasons. Because you know there's someone that loves you. You know there's someone who's trustworthy. You know that Jesus will never, ever give you more than you can handle. And at the end of the day, if it is more than you think you can handle and your life is taken from you, the one who you have fixed your eyes upon is waiting for you on the other side to usher you in. My yoke is easy And my burden is light. My burden is light. That's the picture, the weight that is hung of these teachings. It's saying that when you take on Jesus' yoke and you have now given your life to him, you've become his disciple, you understand the depth. You understand that him saying, you know, not only don't commit adultery, but don't have lust in your heart. You understand that that's actually rest for your souls. That's actually light because he's protecting you from putting on the yoke of slavery to lust again, the yoke of slavery to greed again, the yoke of slavery to covetousness again. He's saying, my burden is light. Those other things are evil taskmasters, but I am not. When we understand Jesus, we see that the burden that we carry is light because it gives us the perspective to know that he is in control and worth following. And not only that, he says, powerfully says, that when the burden seems too heavy, when you feel too loaded down, he says clearly, cast all of your cares. Peter says, cast all of your cares upon him, for he cares for you. Take that burden that you're carrying and say, I'm not meant to carry this. This is too heavy. I'm laying it down at the feet of Jesus. He wants it. He will take it. He can be trusted with it. And that's a picture of what it means to follow him in discipleship. The burden is light, is understanding, being able to understand the deeper purposes of God. It starts with, come to me. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. The invitation starts with coming to him. I love that. Look at Matthew. What was Matthew doing? Matthew was sitting at a tax collector's booth, and he was being weighed down by the yoke. The slavery that was in Matthew's life was greed, and the yoke in Matthew's life was knowing he was being rejected by his own people and denouncing his faith. Because in order to be a tax collector, you had to turn your back on your people. He's working for the Romans, and Jesus said to him, hey, Matthew, Levi, come follow me. And what did he do? He threw off that yoke of greed. I mean, he took a huge financial hit in his career. He threw off the yoke of a job that was paying him more than anyone else he knew. And he threw it away because the chance to follow Jesus was infinitely more valuable than the gain that he was getting with this other yoke upon his shoulders. He followed Jesus. Peter, in the boat, working, fishing, and Jesus says, come follow me. He throws off his other job, his other career, and he comes and he follows him. And that's beautiful for us because it's to say we can throw off that yoke that was on our shoulders. We can get rid of that thing that was weighing us down. And Jesus fits us with his new yoke, with his new teachings, and helps us to follow him and never gives us more than we can handle. As we think about discipleship, as we think about what that looks like, for some of you, the idea of following Jesus, you would not equate with rest. You would not equate it with refreshment. You would not equate it with revitalization. You would equate it with another burden that was laid upon your back. And this is Jesus Christ describing what it looks like to follow him. And he says, come follow me and I will give you true rest and peace. You follow Jesus, your life will not be trouble-free. It doesn't make it all go away. But what it does, it gives you an anchor in the midst of those trials to hold on to. It gives you a peace in the center of that raging storm. And it gives you someone to fix your eyes upon when you can barely move forward through life. Will you pray with me as we finish out our time? God, we love you so much and just thank you for this morning. We thank you for just this promise and this picture, this invitation to more. God, we want to throw off these other yokes. We want to throw off these other slave drivers that have found their way onto our shoulders. And God, I ask you to do that even in this place today. I pray that you would help us to see that you love us and you will never give us more than you can handle. That your yoke is easy and your burden is light. I pray that we would see our relationship with you, Jesus, as refreshing and revitalizing and something worth giving our lives to, that we would be disciples that have our eyes firmly fixed on you with each step that we take. I pray, God, that we would trust you with our burdens. We'd trust you with our pain. We'd lay it at your feet and experience the peace that you promise us through your death on a cross. We love you, and we're so amazed that you've invited us on this journey of discipleship with you. I pray, God, that as we follow your yoke, as we follow your teachings, that we would truly experience the life that you've intended for us. We love you, God, and thank you for this time this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.